You're listening to episode 89 of the Furlough Bros Tech Podcast, Post-Republican Islamic Surveillance Mechanism.
Welcome to episode 89 of the Furlough Bros Tech Podcast. Today is June the 9th, 2013. I'm Matthew Dean Furlough, and this is my super secretive brother, James Furlough.
That's right. Well, and more importantly, I'm no longer in my... Well, it's not a chamber of secrets. It's a fortress of solitude. I have officially moved. You can see I've got some pretty colors now in the background. No longer this stark white background. I feel like I'm not echoing anymore, so that's good.
This is my first tour of the room, just along with everybody else. I've never actually seen it.
Yeah, so that was my dog. So we have here living room, a shelf, a heater, a door leading to the bedroom, another shelf, hardwood floor. Nice. We continue. We got the door. A couch and a window to the outside world.
Holy cow. This is like you're doing this like right in the main
Yeah, so one of the changes we made from this house to the other is my office / desk is now in the living room. So I no longer have a bat cave or a fortress of solitude.
If I remember correctly, that was always one of your goals, was to move there, and it was actually on protest of my sister-in-law that you did not do that. So
yes.
How did you finagle that one?
How did I pull that one off? Well, you know, I just made a very good case, which was, look, anytime we want to watch something cool, we have to go into the back room office, and there was just like, This one chair that is currently draped in a blanket was the only chair besides my ball in the back room, and I always used to steal the chair, and you know, it was just a passive aggressive way of like, hey, you know, if this was in the living room, there you wouldn't have to sit on the ball.
So clever.
So my desk actually, my desk space is now a little bit smaller as a result, but I think in the end it will be good.
It's nice, nice. Well, I'm glad you got your way.
Man, I wrote a blog post a really long time ago. It was like one surface for all activities, and that was the idea. You just had a single room where you did everything, kind of loft style, I guess. And it was all interchangeable and flexible. And
won't it be interesting to see how much Apple agrees with you in about a week? After WWDC, and they launch all their new operating systems and their new Apple TV and the Apple Watch and the new iPhone, and because it turns out everybody thinks they can launch every new product next week. Actually, the iPhone's like the one thing that people are like, we're not going to launch a new one. Don't get excited. but we're not talking about that quite yet, because we still got one more thing we got to do this week, like every week. We will be talking about technology and the continuing corporate opera, or the soap opera of corporations' dealings back and forth, the people working for them, their marketing campaigns, and the technology they are developing. Before we get into the heart of the show, which I tried to short-circuit to, James has a short disclosure that he's got to throw out there.
Yes, I work for HP. However, I do not represent HP or any of HP's opinions, which is not a big deal this week, but next week that will become very important.
Nice. If you want to follow us throughout the week, we've got all sorts of social media outlets. I went to a wedding yesterday, and I was all up in the social media. If you follow me on Instagram or Twitter or Facebook, or you are well aware, Vine. I was Vining a bunch too.
What about Pinterest? Were you Pinteresting?
I don't do the pin thing. I've never been much of a pinner.
I'm going to cut you off in the middle of it. Our dad has discovered Pinterest. Have you noticed this? Except he does it wrong. Because what he does is he surfs Pinterest, finds interesting pictures. I kid you guys not. I had an email full of this. You do too if you haven't seen it yet. And then he does this on his iPad. He takes a screenshot of what he saw and then emails the screenshot.
No way. Are you serious?
Yes. I'm just like, what is this?
That's priceless.
Yeah, and he's like, saw this on Pinterest. You're like, oh, okay. Yes. Awesome. Way to break the social media tool.
Yeah, really, seriously. Wow. I guess we get this from our mom, maybe.
I don't know. Well, he's the weird one, right? Because he had the Apple II, he had the Mac, he had the first, whatever that was, the MacBook. Clearly, we know where we get our Apple fanboyism from.
Yeah.
So when it comes to, like, hardware, man, he's there. He gets it.
He's a super early adopter. He was the first person I knew that had a digital camera. I mean, he got a digital camera before.
Right.
Well, it was ridiculous to have a digital camera because it had like 18 pixels.
Yeah, I remember it took a floppy disk to hold it. And,
that's right.
And I remember when we were at the Hoover Dam and we were taking a family photo, and there was like that other family who were all huddled around it. We're like, what is this magical device?
Right. Yeah.
I remember that.
And sometimes he's a super early adopter, and sometimes it's just like, what are you doing, Dad?
Yeah, so it's like hardware, super early, software, no, thank you, I'm not interested at all.
Yeah.
Which is weird.
That's funny.
Anyways, you can follow me at James Furlow on Twitter.
Okay. My Twitter is at Matthew D. Furlow, all sorts of fun and exciting stuff. And the other thing I want to mention really quickly, I just want to give a quick little shout-out to caffeine. Turns out when you, like, don't use a lot of it all the time, it's really, really a cool drug. I went from, tired enough to fall asleep in my chair about 10 minutes ago to feeling really excited. and it kept me up till 4:30 this morning. Hence why I was wanting to fall asleep in my chair. Oh boy, that was a heck of a wedding.
So I had someone ask me. He was like, he was asking about the podcast because I knew from your tweet that you had gone to bed very early in the morning.
Yes.
Or I should say late in the morning.
Right.
And he was like, so, you know, when he gets tired, does he get chatty or like you just want to fall asleep? And I was like, honestly, he's going to pop a couple full throttles and we won't even know. So he'll be very chatty, but not because he's tired.
Yeah. It was pretty funny, man. There were a couple of.
So we got to get a product endorsement by. You're full throttle guy, aren't you?
I used to be full throttle, and then I decided to not be fat anymore, and I started to go. I had to go look at all these different energy drink options, and
fat comment.
And sugar-free Red Bull ends up being the ones that is the route I go. They're pretty good. If you buy them from the store, they're actually not ridiculously priced. If you buy them like in bulk four at a time, they're like you can get them for like $1.50, $2 each. Which
have you ever tried that? Was it the 5-hour energy ones?
I tried it back when I was like a hardcore caffeine addict and like would take a huge like. Full throttle and fall asleep 10 minutes later. So I never thought it worked, but it might just be. Oh yeah, I mean, I was so immune to caffeine, it was ridiculous. It just got me to kind of normal. Was like all caffeine did. Oh yeah, caffeine's not. I've had an unhealthy relationship with caffeine over the course of my life. Yeah.
Okay.
I'm better. Yeah. It's been a weird 2 years trying to get my my chemical intake between food and caffeine and soda and all that sort of stuff all sorted out. But it's cool when it works. Anyways, so we're not here to talk about caffeine so much, but we are here to talk about all sorts of cool stuff. And one of the things, speaking of digital cameras, Bell Labs has got a big one
Close.
Coming out.
I'll accept it.
Oh yeah, so, you know sometimes you just gotta reach back a little bit.
I understand. You're a little tired, a little punchy.
Yeah. so this is kind of a cool idea. Actually, I thought it was. I read it and I didn't understand it. When I read it, I thought, oh my goodness, this actually totally makes sense. Like, why this would work? Basically, what happened was Bell Labs is looking at how cameras work and cameras. in principle, how a digital camera works and how a film camera works are exactly the same, where you take light, you send it through a bunch of lenses that focus the light and bring it all down to a very small and sensitive area. Mm-hmm. On a film camera, that's a light sensitive film strip. On a digital camera, that's a digital little piece of silicon. And what they were finding was that you would bring all the light in, and then you would just have a matrix of sensors. Okay. And you would take that information and you would process it very quickly, and you would take it all and then you'd compress it into JPEGs, and you'd actually what they find is that you bring all this light in, and then it loses a lot of the data because there's way more photons than there are, you know, number of whatever those things are called, pixels. And you know, the classic example is that with a traditional film camera, the film retains way more resolution than a digital camera ever could. Now, at this point, since we only ever look at pictures on screens, that super high resolution that you get, or, you know, analog resolution you get with a film camera, you
doesn't
can't really
matter.
Tell the difference.
Yeah.
Exactly. So what these guys came up with was this idea of, well, if all we care about is that lost, or the data that has some of the resolution gone, your compressed format, why don't we create a type of silicon that, or a sensor that, how it actually processes the light is already, it has that whole algorithm built into it, where it literally captures a compressed image. And I didn't really get into very deep on exactly how this thing works, outside of the very concept of that's what it's trying to do. What they talk about the idea that it uses a single pixel, and it senses, it has a bunch of different like slits and stuff that it like allows light in through different areas, and it creates this kind of string of data as the light comes in that produces a JPEG and the image. But what's really cool about it is they're saying that because it kind of uses this like single sensor through a number of slits, they don't actually need a lens on it at all. The pictures just come in, or whatever image you're looking at comes in focus. And it's one of those really weird, like, everything is in focus images. And
which almost
where you
would
actually
be a little weird, but
well, it is a little weird, except that Adobe developed a system for doing that, where they have like these like crazy multi-lens things, and essentially what they do is they do post rendering of all of the focus, so you can have a blurred, unfocused picture. You just have to do that in software, and so you can, you know, so the image looks right as your eye, human eye, would see it, but it doesn't. You don't need that, and so they're also saying that so they're talking about how it's like, yeah, we're going to totally get rid of the lens if this kind of thing works.
So you wouldn't, but you'd still need a lens if you wanted to zoom in or out.
Mm-hmm.
But in terms of focusing, you're just shooting, as long as you're not moving, it should be in focus.
Yeah, that's kind of what they're saying. They're saying the biggest problem right now is that it's a slow technology. So.
Mm.
Because it does, instead of the matrix of sensors is essentially how the current one works, because it's like one little tiny sensor. It only really works for things that are standing still. Although it works well, and they said basically what they need to do in order to make it work for all images, they just have to get faster. They have to build.
Well, that'll happen.
Yeah, and they're talking about how at this point they're using a lot of low-cost, commercially available components. So as you kind of work towards building really, you know, highly engineered components for this, it'll get better, and they'll be able to move in that direction. But yeah, their zoom is still, yeah, you would need an actual lens for that. But yeah, it's pretty neat.
That is cool.
Yeah, maybe. Better camera technology, oh baby.
I could do that.
Yeah. I know it's especially important with, you know, like your smartphones, because, you know, that's one of the biggest shortcomings of the camera itself, is that it requires a lens, and there's just not a lot of space in a phone that's a quarter of an inch thick for a lens.
Really? Makes sense. Cool. So I saw a couple new tech things that I thought were pretty cool.
Yeah.
The first one is a repurposing of Wi-Fi signals, where you can use, how do I want to say it? You can use the Wi-Fi signals to interpret your gestures. So, or how to, what's the way to say this? So Wi-Fi signals go all throughout your house, right?
Right.
And you can kind of do the equivalent of like a sonar thing, where it can tell, or maybe that Batman tech, where it can tell where you are and when you move. And so then what you can do is you can give some sort of sign like, hey, pay attention to me, I'm now the remote. And, you know, and so again, like that sonarish technology to be like, oh, you made the sign. And then so you give your indicator, and then you can do a move, and you essentially, you know, send this a signal. Okay, that was probably not the best way to explain it. But here's the overall idea. Is you could be sitting in a chair anywhere in the room, and you give your indicator, which might be like, pat the top of your head. I don't know. and your Wi-Fi router, which is obviously modified, but it goes, oh, he just patted his head, that's the indicator. And then you're like, you might be like sitting there, and you raise both hands up like this, just up into the air. And that tells it, oh, he wants to increase the volume on the radio. Or who has a radio? On the stereo system.
Yeah.
It's like, I don't understand. What's a radio?
What I was really hoping you were going to say there is that when you raise your hands like that up in the air, your X-Wing starts to float out of the swamp.
There you go.
That's my ideal.
No, that's you just hold your hand out for that one and just kind of shake a little bit. Just close your eyes and focus.
Yeah.
And if you're really good, you'd realize that you don't even have to put your hand in the air. It's
exactly.
So that's the idea. And they say if your device is connected to your Wi-Fi router, you know, your Wi-Fi router can essentially act like a remote control receiver, and then tell your device to do whatever it was. They showed examples of turning on lights, turning on and off televisions.
Wow. So, that's cool. I mean, to clarify just a little bit more, it totally makes sense because, you know, a Wi-Fi antenna, like all electromagnetic light, it's just light of some sort. It's just a highly processed light. And just like you can send internet signals through your light fixtures, you can, and that are used to illuminate, and you can measure those bounce back. And it's, you know, it's essentially how cameras and lasers work.
So
you know?
Speaking of cameras, they were like, it's very similar to the Xbox Kinect, except it uses Wi-Fi signals, which the cool parts about that is it goes through walls, so it doesn't require line of sight. And
I guess what I'm surprised by is that
oriented
it goes through walls, but it doesn't go through you. I was always under the impression that we weren't very good at blocking Wi-Fi signals, but I guess we are.
I don't know. But the other interesting thing about this was that it uses, at least right now, computer learning to learn what your indicators and what your remote signs are. So you'll do a motion, patting the top of your head over and over and over again until the computer goes, okay, I get it. You're doing something right now, and I need to pay attention to that particular movement. And then once you've taught it that, then you can teach it whatever you want the next sign to be to do something, which is interesting. And they're like, and that indicator in some ways acts as a password, whereas, you know, someone else would have to do it in order for it to work and do it the way you do it. Otherwise, they can't, you know, they can't open up your garage door on you by doing an indicator.
How do I turn your TV on, James? Oh, you just, take your nose. You what?
press the power button. Come on.
I gotta say, there's a lot of things. That's fascinating. I wonder how sensitive it is. I wonder what sort of things it'd pick up on. And that's cool. I hope.
Yeah. So, stuff like that happens. So my opinion, because these are guys at University of Washington who are doing it, is that this particular like technology will never be commercially available. You know, they're not going to come up with a product and be like, Wi-Fi gesture module, buy it now for $999.99. Right. And it won't be that expensive. But I could see where other companies kind of start to run with this and they get integrated into something else. You know, Microsoft buys the tech.
Right. One of the things I like about it is that it kind of gives you the... It's you know, they get into this, you know, they're talking gesture control, but I think just general awareness of where people are and who the people are in a house or in a building is, you know, that would indicate to me something that's way more powerful, because, you know, it's the classic, you know, you've got a bunch of speakers in your house all tethered together, lights and speakers and temperature control, you know, all tethered to one central computer, and you want the music and lights to follow you throughout the house and turn off and play areas you or you weren't, and you know, change temperature control. And if you had a device that could track you through the walls, this is all going to become really terrifying in about an hour half hour when we start talking about the NSA. But right now, it seems like a really cool idea for having your computer know where you are all the time in your house.
Well, yeah.
Like, and, what room?
and my thought with that was really like the past were desktops. The current are mobile devices. The immediate future is wearable computing, and you know, and at each stage it introduces a new type of GUI and a new type of sensor, you know, of input, really, and you know, way of interacting with it, I guess. And I do genuinely believe that wearable computing is the next phase. I mean, if you haven't figured that out yet, just look at what Google's doing. Look at all the iWatch rumors. Right. That's the direction it's headed in. But I also believe, and you know, this is the Star Trek, you know, wish and hopes, right? That the latest movie kind of ignores, but whatever. You know, the very long-term future is no device, where the computers are everywhere and they just detect where you are and what you're doing. And they have different sensors. Not only can they sense what's going on with you, but they can also sense what's going on in your environment, and you know, and contextualize what's going on. You know, it's, hey, this person's sweating, right? And it's, you know, you have your fuel band that tells you, oh, you're sweating, but it goes because it's 100 degrees outside. Whoa!
Yeah.
You know? And so, you know, can start to pull some of those things together. So it turns on the fan for you, hey, because it's hot.
Oh man! Wow, that actually. Whoa. Okay, mind just blown. I want a temperature control system. I want an HVAC system in my house, a thermostat that doesn't tell me, doesn't set how warm the room is, that regulates how warm or cold I am. That's
Boom.
What. That's yeah. where it goes. That's, I mean, like, obviously that's where it goes. Like, let's say, you know what, one day it's going to seem goofy that we used to, that we regulate the temperature of the room as opposed to regulate, you know, based on what we want the room temperature to be, as opposed to regulate the temperature of ourselves. That's
yeah,
what we
imagine,
want. That's what we've always wanted to regulate.
Yeah,
what
totally.
The
imagine the computer knows if you're wearing a sweater or not, and it's like, well, we don't need to be as hot in here because he's wearing a sweater. You know, as a matter of fact, it knows when you're driving home whether or not you're wearing a sweater and what the temperature is in the car, which will give you an indicator of what you might want it to be in the house. And, you know, I mean, there's – so all that to say, I think that this Wi-Fi, which, by the way, is called a WISE, W-I-S-E-E. Stupid name, but you know, whatever.
I was gonna say they're gonna have to come up with a better name.
You know, I thought the same thing about Nintendo's Wii, so what do I know?
Yeah. But so, Nintendo had the awesome "We would like to play" campaign.
Yeah,
I mean,
right. Well, they're like, we see. No, we don't.
Yeah.
So
I guess it's a. Yeah.
Anyways,
Big Brother's watching. Mm.
The point of all that is, I think that's a perfect example of where it's headed. Where
right.
And I think the Kinect again is another great example of that is limited to the living room, and eventually it won't be, and that's cool.
Right.
That is cool, and like you said, later on we'll also talk about how that could be potentially scary, but for now
potentially It is. It just is terrifying.
Well, I must admit that I didn't follow it very closely. I was on business travel all week, and so every time one of those articles came up, I was like, oh, I'm actually going to have to read this and study this, and I don't have time right now.
Yeah. Well, don't worry. I mean, let's talk about whatever we're going to talk about.
Before that, another cool thing that I saw, which gets back to this whole wearable computing trend, you know, the immediate future.
Yes.
Is this new app that is called Whistle. I think that's the name of the app.
Oh, you were.
No, the startup is named Whistle. Yeah, yeah. He didn't run over. Okay, cool. It is an app and it's essentially Fitbit for your dog. There you go.
Oh, what? That's awesome.
So you can you put this, you attach it to the dog's collar,
and it's called a Whistle. That's all. I get it.
There you go. It's all coming together. So you put it on your dog's collar, and it tracks your dog's activities throughout the day. And they're like, your dog doesn't care. You know what I mean? They're like, their dog doesn't care about the number of steps. But it's for you to make sure that your dog is being healthy throughout the day. And you can kind of track their patterns on, oh, look at this. At like 10 a.m., that's when they were chewing up my shoe because they were active, you know, versus, oh, they were sleeping a lot. And I'm like, okay, kind of cool. Hey, if they've got GPS in there and now I can find my dog if he gets lost, okay, I'm now super, super interested. I don't think it does. It has Wi-Fi and Bluetooth. But again, if it had like a GPS tracker, I'd be like, awesome. Because this thing is $99 right now.
And, find my iDog.
Yeah, find my iDog. Where are you, pups? And then the other thing is that I liked about it is they said they will be able to track your dog's activities throughout its life, similar to the Fitbit. And they said what's interesting about dogs is that they are very good about hiding any sort of problem they might have. You know, they may not be feeling great, but if you're like, let's go for a walk. All right, yeah, going for a walk. And there may be subtle changes in their behaviors that you as the owner don't notice just because, you know, you live with them all the time and it's your dog. And you know what I mean? You're not evaluating your dog's health. You're just hanging out playing with it. So they were saying by quantifying your dog's activities, they will be able to detect patterns and be able to tell when there's a problem and, you know, and at least be able to alert you, hey, you know what, Fido's acting a little weird. He didn't move at all today. Normally he at least will chew up the newspaper for 15 minutes every day and he didn't do that today. I'm sure it doesn't say that. But other than just give you an alert, something's weird, should have him checked out, he's being less active.
Yeah, I mean, that goes back to that idea of, you know, one of the earliest indicators for dementia in patients oftentimes is their response time when picking up a phone. You know, they pick up the phone call and say, hi, this is Matthew, I'm talking to. And what they say is that response time lengthens over time. And actually, it's not until, like, you're 3 years in that individuals really start to pick up on the symptom of, wow, they're really lingering there. Whereas if you have a computer like constantly measuring that, they can pick it up to 2 years earlier, which really, I mean, like, especially for Alzheimer's and just general dementia, I mean, you can start preventative treatments that will push the disease off by 15 years if you start that early, but only a computer will recognize it. And I got to imagine that with dogs, it's all the more important because just like with a lot of mental health problems, and you don't recognize that there's something wrong until, you know, because the very tool that's designed to, you know, evaluate that there's something wrong can't express it to the rest of the world, whether it's your brain or your dog's brain. And whereas this is a way to very systematically and data intensively track that. That's cool. I actually like that a lot. I mean, and you can probably catch problems way early, and if you're, you know, that's cool.
Yeah, and the pet industry is one where owners have proven over and over again that they are willing to spend generously on their fur babies. And
right,
yeah, I looked at it and it was $100, and that was just enough out of my price range where I was like, I don't know. But man, if it were 50, I probably would be the proud owner of one. I'd be like, yeah, I bought one. But and all I'd say, if it had the GPS for, I'm not super concerned about my dog getting lost, but it's kind of like, I'd like to know, you know what I mean? Or, I'd like to know where he's at, because I'm like, yeah. If it included that, even if I had to charge it like once a week because of the power consumption, I'd be like, all right, yeah, I'm in. I probably would have ponied up the $100 and done it, just because that would be cool to be like, how active is this guy? Because I've done the leave the computer camera on for a day to see what he does. I only did that, if you remember, when he was a little guy, and we'd leave him in one room and we'd come home and he'd be in a totally different room with the gate still up. You'd be like, how does that work? And you go, which, did you see that? That one was, what was that? Was that on Facebook? Oh, I don't remember. I think it was. But it was that it had gone like semi-viral, where this owner, their neighbors kept giving them noise complaints about their dog barking while they were away. Did you see this one? And so they decided to record what was going on while they were away. And come to find out that it was the dog hopping up onto the piano, banging on the keys, and barking along with the music that it was making. And they were just like, oh my gosh, no way.
But, so all of our Reddit hipsters are gonna scoff at me if I don't mention this, but it's it was like on Reddit, and that's where, and it was somebody who had reposted that video from like 2 years ago or a long time ago with that story, that accompanying story, that the dog was doing this, you know, barking. And it just was like this perfectly timed camera and like angle, as though we knew exactly what was going on. But yeah, it's a cute video, but it's not exactly the dog.
Well, that's fine.
But I get the.
I'm not as cool. I'm not cool enough to be on Reddit. Though I will admit, I did sign up, and I have a couple pages that I technically follow, but never actually follow up on. They're not called pages. They're called
subreddits.
Subreddits. There we see. I'm not even that cool. I use the wrong terminology.
Okay. It's better that way.
It's better that way. I think I'll be cool enough to get on it and, you know, actually genuinely use it. I'm just not quite there yet.
It's funny. I do find that I'm diversifying my information, my goof off time again. I go through ebbs and flows over, you know, months and months long period where I'll go from like one source of flow of information where I get, you know, one website that I get everything through, and then I'll start to diversify and I'll start, you know, clicking around for other websites and find other sources, and then I'll usually kind of reconverge down to the how my schedule works. And I'm in a expanding beyond Reddit phase again.
Speaking of expanding and finding diversity, as you know, the deadline for the end of the internet is slowly but surely marching forward in time, and
people keep yelling at me.
I know. It's like every time you log in, hey, just so you know, we are actually going to shut this down. It wasn't a bluff. Like, okay.
Yeah, which right. I have a feeling they're getting. I wonder.
I wish that they had time. Could you imagine had that been like an April Fool's prank that they set up like 2 months in advance? But they say it were like. What is it? It's if they're like, it's going to close the end of March, and you know, and you say it in just such a way where you're like, you know, hopefully you don't realize that April 1st is the very next date, and you know, how you're just like, April Fools, we're back, we're not going anywhere, ha, we know, we love you guys, we love the internet. Anyways, it's not going to happen, but whatever.
Unfortunately.
So two stories about that. The first one is it would appear to me that the current lead is Feedly for the replacement thing, And so they've been working on a lot of stuff. I feel like they took an early – they got an early bounce. They got the lead a little bit, and they're just like, okay, guys, we need to run as fast and as hard as we can, because if we do that for the next, you know, however long it was, 60 days or something, they're like, we can win. I don't know what we're going to win, but we could win. And so they've been so they've been working on it. And so they came out with like seven things that they worked on. First one is they're making it faster, making it easier to search, lame stuff. But then what they also said is that they are getting integration with Reader, GReader, Prest, NextGen, and Newsify through their API, which is cool.
Interesting.
Because I use Reader on the Mac, and I love it. And so I was like, oh, I don't want to lose that one. And Reader was like, oh, we'll have a standalone option, which I'm like, oh, okay, that's kind of cool, but not as cool. And then and then I use Flipboard on my phone, which is really nice because it has the feed, plus I get my Instagram feed and Twitter and stuff, and I really like to have it all in one place, which is why Flipboard is doing well. They haven't announced anything with Flipboard yet, but I'm really, 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 really hoping that Flipboard decides to add access to their API as well, because then it'll be like nothing happened, where I'll use Reader on my Mac, use Flipboard on my phone, and then when I'm on my work PC, I can just go to Feedly's website, which currently right now requires a plugin for Chrome, but they said they're working on a plugin list option. So I think that's probably the one that I'm going to jump to. I technically have already jumped to it because, you know, I signed up and it synced everything automatically for me.
Nice.
You know, so yeah, that was the other nice part. They're like, exporting is ridiculously easy.
I should probably do that sooner than later, because I have a feeling I'm gonna.
There's like two things that you should probably do. A, at least sign up for this, because like I said, it syncs it all with you, so it's all there. And then B, just export all your feeds and put them into an Excel spreadsheet or something.
I know it's a pain.
Yeah. I know, we don't have a choice. They're closing it down.
It's a super pain. I'm just so upset about the whole thing.
So ridiculous. the other article related to this is a Wired article that said why Google Reader really got the axe.
I am curious to hear what the real reason is.
Okay, we
had our theories.
Yeah. So here's, according to Wired, what they think is going on is the team is now working on Google Plus related stuff. And so they are, you know, obviously not working on Reader, and they don't just want to let it sit there. But it's because they've had a change in, how do you want to say it? Like, it's a couple things. Okay, so two reasons. The first one, which is kind of like their official thing, is they said that it used to be that you would go throughout your day, and you'd like be eating breakfast and you'd read your news, and then you might have some leisure news reading time in the evening, which RSS was perfect for that. You don't have to visit the websites, you could just catch up on the news. They said the world has progressed to such where, for the most part, a lot of people are consuming news all day, all the time. And so this idea of storing your news articles, like, it's a joke, we don't store them, we're pretty much reading them as fast as they come in, which I was like, clearly you do not know how many feeds I have.
Right.
You know, that's there's that.
But I mean, that does echo even what I was saying, you know, at the beginning of, I guess this is pre-show, but my comment of, you know, we both had busy weeks, and so I was kind of freaking out that earlier today, as I was like, oh my gosh, I got to do like the entire show prep for the entire week. And like before I started reading new articles, I realized I had six already. I was like, where did these even come from? Like,
yeah.
I had no time. I had like no time this week. How did I find six articles that I wanted to talk about? What the heck?
Yeah.
And it's because of that.
So there's that.
I was consuming the whole time.
Yeah, exactly. And then one of the perks of being in the living room is you get to watch people walk in and out. There's that entertainment in the background, much like that one Community episode where Abed was helping give birth to a baby in the background of an entire episode. which was
that's hilarious.
Funny, which I didn't catch until the very end and went, wait a second. Had to go back and rewatch the entire thing. which is exactly what they wanted. Kudos to them. anyways, so that's totally one of the points about that is, you know, we do just kind of consume news throughout the day. The other thing, and the reason why they moved the Google Reader team over to Google Plus, is that their goal is to de-emphasize news sources and just emphasize news. And so during those leisure times, they want you to just hang out on Google Plus, which they're starting to more define not as a social network, but as a social news source. Does that make sense? I mean, it's a slight little tweak there. And one of the examples of that was, remember how they said on certain posts they'll have those tags and you can click on the tag and then it'll give you more stories related to whatever that tag was?
Yeah.
Remember what I'm talking about there?
Yes.
On Google Plus. And that's an example of them trying to be a... Oh, my gosh. Looks like it hurt, bud. Wow, he makes a lot of noise when he comes to the doggy door. That's the idea of a social news aggregator. So you don't care as much about the source and who you're reading your news from, which, an RSS reader is the source is very front and center. You know exactly who you're getting it from, and you're only getting those stories. These are more trying to focus on what you're interested in, regardless of where the source was, regardless of the timing, and more importantly, you are on Google Plus the entire time. I was on Google Reader the entire time too. But you know, you're not necessarily jumping to another tab and then reading that article and jumping back. It really is. So their whole thing is, if you're looking for, a little more, then you can talk. If you're looking for just like a casual reading time, Google Plus is perfect. Just flip through the stuff, dive as deep as you want, do whatever. If you are the news junkie, I want to catch everything. Like, there are already sources out there, a la Twitter, that Twitter's a big one. Tumblr could be a good one, depending on the sources you follow. And like, so for those people, they're not gonna focus on those people anymore.
I don't know. I get this feeling that that's what killed Dig. And I think one of the big problems that Dig ran into was obviously that they were having a tremendous amount of success as a direct competitor to Reddit, in style and how they did it. And really the difference between the two sites wasn't function at all. It was community, which communities were where, and a lot of people liked the community on Dig. I mean, there were some minor differences in function, but they were very small. And so they made this big this big change in function where they really went to, move towards kind of being these very, were that same idea, because with Dig and Reddit, it is very much a, the source isn't important. It's the information. It's
right.
what is democratically the most interesting is what's brought to the top of your newsfeed. Whereas with Dig,
real quick, let's register that domain.
I know, seriously.
We'll get sued by both companies.
I was gonna say, I'm willing to bet it already exists. It's already taken. Digit.com. It's already taken.
Dang.
It doesn't give me... Wow, it's a completely blank page. That's really funny.
What a waste.
Or maybe my computer's crashing. I don't know.
All right, here we go. Digit.com.
Yeah, it's a blank page, and it's got a... Wow. It's got a... frame set rows, 100%. Frame border, no. Border, zero. Frame spacing, zero. It's just a... blank page. Interesting.
Huh.
Nice job, guys. I don't know who owns it, but it's stupid.
You could offer to buy it from them.
Yeah. What are we going to put on it?
Stuff.
But
Doesn't
yeah, exactly. Interesting things. So,
top news stories of the day. Scraped from Dig and Reddit.
Actually, oh man, that would be back before the Exodus, that would have been a pretty good website where all it did was take it had the top 20, and it was just the top 20 from Dig and Reddit links to each of the respective websites. but that would be awesome. Dig it.
With an
yeah, exactly. but my point was that the move to Dig V4 was this idea of moving away from the community driven idea to, you know, the people that you follow, that you're friends with, those we're going to focus on getting your stories. So we're going to create a customized front page, essentially, which Reddit does with the whole subreddit system is you get rid of different, you know, streams and different categories. But it was, you know, with Dig, it was going to be a much more focused algorithm about you and the things that you like, and we're going to try to, you know, predict what you like based on what your friends are liking and what the rest of the community is liking, like, you know. And it sounded like this great idea, but it was terrible. It didn't work. I didn't get any interesting articles. And it's
other than the ones Facebook you manually subscribe to, which I was like, these are already in my RSS feed anyways. So
exactly,
why do I care?
And it's the problem that Facebook runs into that I talk about every once in a while. It's like Facebook doesn't have a content problem. It has you have a friend problem. If you don't think Facebook has very interesting content, it's because you don't have interesting friends. And you know, it sounds awful, but it's like, you know, it's one of the reasons why I keep my Twitter feeds. You know, I have such small subscription, like people that I subscribe to, because to me that's like I'm looking for specific content from specific people, and I don't want just a massive like fire hydrant of information. You know, I
let's see here, what do you follow 28 people? Yeah. You have 39 following you.
Yeah, see, I mean, don't, you know, I actually use Twitter a lot more. You know what is so interesting? I actually use Twitter because
cool
it's
picture.
A good. If I use Twitter, it automatically posts it to Facebook, and so I actually don't do status updates on Facebook because I use Twitter all the time. And it's I actually think it's a more convenient way to post stuff. But
you do know that on your iPhone it has the Facebook button right next to the Twitter button, right? It's just
yes.
Tap okay.
The apps are right next to each other. I know, I realize that, but it's just like...
It's just so hard.
I know. Well, so part of it, it's funny. It's part of, you know, it's funny. There's the part of me is like, it's the creative constraint as well, as ridiculous as that is. Having the 140 character limit, forces me to actually...
Such a snob.
Be concise and... Well, no, it's just I don't want to be boring. I'm like... My statuses aren't interesting enough. At least they're short, you know?
Yeah, you're like, I got you. You know, you try to follow you follow interesting people, so you have an interesting stream, and so you try to reciprocate by being interesting yourself.
Yeah, and brevity is the heart of wit. I mean, come on.
Yeah, now. Yeah.
And as somebody who is rarely brief, you know, yeah. Anyways, I don't know. I don't know if this is going to work for... I see what Google Plus is doing here, or Google is doing with Google Plus, where it's kind of... They're trying to... They realize that that's what people use Facebook for. It's that kind of stream. The new stream was one of the things that really made it even more accessible and interesting and give people a lot of resonance time. And so they're trying to build a better news stream is what it is.
Well, and Twitter's fantastic at that.
Yeah. I don't know. There's this weird, like, I don't like the curation process that a lot of these companies use to generate the information, especially when, you know, like, and I guess what my
well,
thing
and that's
is
they're not designed for you. That's the
I know.
You are outside of the standard user. You know, most people don't consume as much news as you do.
That's true. That's very true, and one of the things is, you know, I'm kind of a hipster. I want to get information that nobody else has, you know, totally outside the...
Right.
You know, oh, this is going to sound, you know, ridiculous, but the NSA, I almost contemplated not talking about it this week, not even bringing it up because I was like, everybody has already heard about it. Like,
boom, so that was me. And I was like, I'm cool.
I was gonna say, and then I thought about it. I was like, that's ridiculous. Like, not everybody who listens to the show has read every article and listened to hours of, you know, talk news about whatever. And it's, you know,
I'm glad you did because so. I didn't.
Yeah. So. We ended up deciding that we do want to talk about the old NSA,
what is up with that?
Yeah. So this is the thing, James. We are being listened to right now by the
well, that's
NSA.
Good.
We're being recorded. Yeah.
And so how many of our subscribers are NSA agents? That's the question.
Probably not very many of them.
They're listening right now.
So the NSA is the National Security Association. No. What are they? What?
That sounds wrong.
It's wrong. Agency.
Agency, yeah.
It's a complete brain fart.
Association.
So the NSA is an American agency, federal government type stuff.
Like the IRS, but just a different acronym.
Yeah, exactly. And they are, from time to time, accused of malfeasance because they are tasked. They're one of the agencies tasked with malfeasance is sort of their bread and butter.
We're gonna get ourselves in trouble. Oh no, wait, we're fine because everyone's talking about it this week. We're good.
Exactly. They're wiretappers. They you know, back in the day. They'd tap your phone lines when the Patriot Act was enacted back after 9/11. The NSA was really the biggest beneficiary. They're a agency that gathers information and they think of new creative ways of figuring out what everybody's talking about, with the express goal of keeping us safe at. I'm going to try my hardest to not get too political
in this. That was the other reason why I was like, well, I don't care. But anyways.
Yeah, it's a tough one to not talk about. But thankfully, pretty much everybody but the government seems to be on the same page with, on this one. So it's politically relatively safe.
And just for the fun of it, I'll take the contrarian view, just so.
Yeah, all right.
Just so you know.
You know, that's good. So basically what's going on here is the NSA is listening to everything we're talking about and
figures.
Yeah. And actually not listening to everything we're talking about. That's a misquote. So
what are they doing?
They started a program called PRISM. Nobody actually knows what it stands for, but it's an acronym of some sort.
Revised International Measures.
You forgot the S, but yeah, close enough.
I did.
Yeah.
Semi-measures.
Semi-measures. So basically what PRISM is it's this program. It's a tool that they describe. It's a series of systems and technological advances that allows them to collect data. There's a few different aspects to this. Number one, it's what is it? Who are they? What is PRISM? Who's it collecting data from? How is it collecting the data? And what data is it collecting from? And so, in that order, what was the first question I asked? Who? What? No.
I don't know. I was trying to think of creative words. So far, I got like post-Republican something surveillance mechanism.
Something Islamic. So basically what's going on here is I guess it's easiest to start here. Basically the NSA they built these giant server farms. Some of the biggest server farms in the world.
Wow.
We've mentioned this on the show before, are NSA server farms. They store a tremendous amount of data. It's unbelievable.
Man, if I ever needed a data scientist job, that's what to sign up for. Of course, I got a government salary. I don't get the awesomeness I have now, but
yeah, it's true.
Which is working from home, awesome hours, and a great boss.
So, hi, James's boss. So yeah, we, what they they built this, and everybody's known that they had this thing for a long time. I mean, like, it's not the sort of thing that you keep secret, that you can keep secret, these giant data centers.
That's hard.
Yeah.
And no, so that building, it's for raising cattle. It's different.
Exactly. It just requires a tremendous amount of electricity, like more than anything else out there.
Let's just keep it digital tax files. That's all. That's it. So storage.
Exactly. And the NSA is like, there's no real mystery about what they do in that.
Right.
In that they collect data and look for secret stuff in there. They look for terrorists. That's like their job. So everybody was like, that's what it's used for, but it's gigantic. Why do they need that much data? What exactly is it all? So basically, I guess what I'm trying to say here is that if you're somebody who follows the tech industry, if you're somebody who follows kind of politics in a lot, like, none of this is really that shocking. What's so shocking about it is that this is the first time it's ever been, like, fully confirmed. Like, yeah, this is what's happening. But we've known for a long time there have been people in the NSA and just people who have been related to the NSA that basically say the NSA just collects everything. They collect everything from everybody. And we didn't really know how deep that goes, but now it's coming out. They collect everything from everybody, like Google, Yahoo, Apple, Verizon, AT&T, T-Mobile. I mean, they collect everything from everything. Visa, MasterCard. When you run your credit card, when you make a phone call, they collect all sorts of data. And they store it for later use. Now, how they get around your right to privacy and, you know, requiring one of those, like, permit things or whatever they're called, warrants in order to search you, is basically they collect all the data, and then they say, and then what they do is they go to a judge and say, hey, we want to look at James Furlow. We think that he's
Man.
We don't like him, and we want to look into it. And what they say is that the description I've been given about how their data centers work is actually pretty interesting. It's like you've got all these spreadsheets essentially, and they're like, if you think of them as pieces of glass with a bunch of data, basically what they do is you align all of these pieces of glass together, and then, you know, like, you type in somebody's name and it'll kind of build these social networks of who you talk to, what you're talking about, or like where you're spending your money, what you're doing. And what's really fascinating about it is that they actually, like, one of their big defenses is that they don't actually collect the contents of your phone calls. You know, everybody's always said, like, they collect every tweet. We've known that forever. That's, like, they're open about that. This is public domain. Like, the Library of Congress has a complete backup of the entire Twitter feed of the world. You know,
yeah, no big deal.
Right. And so it's, like, a whole big mystery, and the NSA looks for, like, keywords of, like, I'm going to commit acts of terrorism on Twitter. Like,
subtle. Really?
Yeah. If you're doing that, if you're a terrorist trying to get away with terrorism, I don't recommend you do that. But as someone who doesn't want you to succeed, I recommend you do that. But what they're saying now is, they're like, we don't get records of all your phone calls. We just track the metadata. And their defense is that your metadata is not as interesting as other stuff. But, you know, as, like, the content of the phone calls. Because, you know, we're not checking to see if you're talking about your terrorist plot. We're just seeing who you're talking to. What was fascinating about this is, and if I read a couple of stuff where guys that, like, do surveillance in Afghanistan, which is essentially, we do this stuff all over the world. I mean, like, we stoop all over Europe, all over the Middle East, all over, well, China not so much, just because it's more difficult, because they don't like it when we do it.
But we would like
to. Whereas, like, Europe likes us doing it. Yeah, we would. We do. We just don't do it very well because they try to stop us. Whereas Europe, they're like, yeah, America, check out everything that's going on inside of us. And we in turn go to Europe and say, hey, Europe, how about you, spy on all of our citizens too? If we ever need to swap data, we will.
We're good. Like, we didn't collect, like, anything about Americans. They do that kind of stuff. We're fine.
That's actually, like, legitimately, yes, that's the argument, is that we the American government does not spy on Americans, We just have open communication with somebody who does.
It's all
and
good.
They're not American, so it's cool, right? That's all legal.
Fine.
And
is it second generation cousin? It's not cheating
it's
or
so
whatever.
Yeah. Yeah. Actually, it's not cheating. I think it would still be cheating, but legality is.
You know what I mean.
Oh man. Okay, remind me to talk to you about that after the show. That's
it's never good when you start with that.
An interesting and funny story that I can say. It reminds me of an interesting and funny story that is probably not appropriate for a live audience.
Okie dokie. That's so unfair, man. You're leaving them out.
I know. Well, I'm sorry, guys.
If you guys want to know what it is, DM me later. Go ahead.
Yeah, pretty much. So, where was I? So,
I don't know.
What they're talking about is they're collecting metadata, and why this is important is because in Afghanistan, don't actually like track phone calls or anything. They only collect metadata, and what they do with that, and where you're doing your transactions, who you're talking to, and why they do that is because they can figure out everything they need to know about your routine, where you're going, who you're associating with, who you're talking with, and they build these social networks of who you associate with. And then once they're pretty sure that, like, you talk to terrorists, you walk like a terrorist, you do things like terrorists,
quack
then we
like
fly a drone and blow you up. And which what's horrifying if you're not into this sort of thing, or gratifying if you are, is that's about the extent of how our drone program works. Is we just kind of figure, you shouldn't have been friends with terrorists if you didn't want to get blown up. And
if you didn't want us to think you were a terrorist, don't act like one.
Exactly.
Good point.
Wow, that's all it takes to get vaporized by America right now. That's good to know.
It's a brave new world we live in.
But really, I can't wait till China builds a drone program, because all of a sudden we're going to be like, wait a second, guys. This is not cool. The UN has to regulate this. You can't just go flying to other countries and blow people up. Like, you've been doing that for a decade, but that's different.
We're American. It's fine.
Yeah. I generally, I'm coming off as very anti-American right now. I generally like what we do.
Did you read this and just be like in disgust and find yourself just like, I can't believe they're doing this. Unbelievable. You know, were you up in arms as much as some of these other articles are?
See, this is what's weird is I think it's really interesting in how they do it and what they're doing. The technological developments. This whole idea
of you're like, that's cool the way they did it.
Yeah, I find that very interesting. But the horrifying truth of the fact that everything we do gets listened to and recorded, and you know,
which I'm kind of like, can they just republish this podcast for us? Do I have to really go through the processing myself?
Come on, guy. You see, but the thing is that they don't actually listen to the contents of the podcast, which they're missing out on.
Seriously, like,
guys. Get your act together. This is good stuff. But what they do is they track the fact that you and I talk to each other every week, and they know where we're broadcasting from because all that information's stored in the router.
So if you ever become a terrorist, I'm in trouble.
Yes. Yeah. Good luck with that.
Okay.
And
good to know.
And yeah, pretty much. And
just for the record, if you do ever become a terrorist, we are not talking again. Just
okay.
Put that out.
You know
there.
What? Duly noted. I will consider that heavily as I debate whether or not to be a terrorist.
Yeah, let just be a weight on your decision.
Yeah,
there.
Yeah, just yeah.
Just factor in on it.
Oh jeez. But
they've got metadata. They don't know what we're saying. It's fine.
I guess for me, you know, to answer that question, it's not outraging. This new revelation hasn't been outrageous because to me, it's like I don't know anything more about what they were doing or why than I did a week ago. Which is to say, I already knew most of this. Mm. It's the very particulars that's really the new brave new world of this whole story to me. It's that's what's interesting. It's You know, one of the things we're talking about is with the prism, is which, you know, I actually think it's a clever name in that, you know, what does a prism do? You take light and it diverts it into different streams. It breaks it up into different information. And essentially that's what they're doing, is they're saying they're taking all of your, they're calling them your tier one data lines, your fiber optics. You know, we've got, you know, the whole cool part about the internet is that it's, there's no direct route for anything, so you can destroy entire nodes and it'll stay robust and fast. But there are main paths that everything goes on, and the NSA has just downloaded their software and put their hardware into the main router stations on those tier one lines. And what they're talking about is the fact that they're basically able to pick up and divert information and record it as things are traveling back and forth. So it's like, you know, Facebook, Apple, Yahoo, Google. I don't know why Yahoo gets included in that. They're not big enough to matter. Facebook, Google, Apple, those companies and a lot of other companies have all denied the fact that they're involved in any way in this. What's really strange is that they all denied it the exact same way, which suggests
conspiracy.
My inclination is that they are not very cooperative. I wouldn't say that they're uncooperative.
The way that I read it too was, the way that they denied it, they were like, it was a very particular thing that they denied. And you're like,
right.
Yeah, but you could still be doing it. I mean, yeah, it was, what's an example? You know, it would be like, oh, I didn't break into the house through the front door.
Right. Yeah. We did. You know, that sort of, like, everybody, all three of them were like together. They were like, we did not leave a back door for the NSA to come into our servers and snoop around all the information. You're like, yeah, but you don't need a back door. You just need to let them, like, you just need to not build security protocols that they can't decrypt. And that's the big thing, is that they're like, they're talking about the fact that, you know, it's if the NSA can decrypt the information as it's passing through these major lines, and Google, Apple, and Facebook aren't trying to stop them, then that's good enough. That's all the NSA needs, and that's exactly what the NSA is doing. You sit there and you go, like I said, I don't think that they're giving, you know, Google, they don't have a, you know, direct route to your Google search history. Google's, you know, whereas Google has all that data, they're like, yeah, you can't, you know, the NSA can't just drop it and be like, hey, we want to look at everything that Matthew searched. But if the NSA records it all and decrypts all, you know, gets rid of all the encryption and has their own database of everything I searched, Google's not going to stop them, because they're like, well, we can't really. I mean, what are you going to do?
Right. I guess at that point it is. What do you do if you...
Right.
You know, if they're capturing it all and they can... I read they were like, it's too much work to decrypt everything. But if they decide that you're a person of interest and, you know, and they do those select ones, you know, they could do that. And what would you do? You're like, we don't give them access, but we also can't stop them, so...
Right, and
that sounds less bad.
They're not actively fighting the government, you know. So I guess that's
should they be? So what if the government is collecting that information and decrypting it? Who cares?
Yeah, that's what you okay. So now, and this is where it gets just a tad political, and I'm going to do my best to be delicate here, because not everybody believes this is a big of a deal, but almost every major news publication, from the New York Times, the Washington Post, liberal, conservative, doesn't matter, agree that the IRS targeting conservative groups for extra scrutiny,
agreed.
You know, it was an abuse of power, and so the concern isn't the fact that they're doing it, it's what happens when they abuse it, and the history of governments
is that
if they have a power to abuse, someone will. And it's like, it doesn't matter as much as it doesn't matter how much you trust, you know, President Obama, or you would have trusted Mitt Romney, or you would have trusted whoever, you know, George Bush. It's the fact that, like, you don't know who the next guy is. Like, you know, it's you know, maybe,
well,
it'll be
quite
Ron
frankly,
Paul and it'll,
they're all yeah. human and greedy in some way. I mean, as a, our society is founded around capitalism and wanting more and, right. you know, pushing the boundaries as much as you can. And so, surprise, surprise, put a human in control. What do they do? So,
right.
you know, okay, I get it, I guess. Where it may not be an issue today, it probably isn't an issue. They're probably not even close to an issue. But, you know, 20 years from now when we're all used to it and that's just the way it is and we all got the retina and Scott, whatever, the eye scanner thing like in Minority Report, you could get someone in there who has,
you know,
lower moral values,
right.
no matter what party, and takes advantage of it in some way that they shouldn't. I could see that as an argument.
And you're giving a super weapon to...
That's why we have a balance of powers. Three branches. Well, they all look at each other.
And what's disconcerting is it's
these
like...
aren't in them.
I was going to say, number one, this isn't in them. Well, it is. I mean, it's oversight. You know, you get all the oversight from
hey, clearly
Congress
they got caught, just like the IRS people did. And in the U.S., at least, we are all about you're innocent until proven guilty. So you got to do something wrong before... you get in trouble, you know, or before some sort of barrier or rule comes up, which becomes annoying with tax codes and TSA agencies, but that's the way that we work here. And, you know, but so I guess the question is there stuff out there that hasn't been caught and never will be caught? And, you know, you never know because of the nature of that question. But at least in these examples that seemed pretty egregious, they got stopped before it turned into anything really bad.
You'd think, well, I guess what my point is that my concern is that you my concern is that you really are giving a super weapon to the people who are in charge of it. I mean, you can destroy somebody and you can destroy any of the people that could help them.
Destroy them in the sense that all you got to say is we think they're terrorists and let that go where it goes.
Well, not just that, but just give the, you know, if everybody has information that they don't want to get out, you're a political adversary and you're on the rise and you're taking down, you know, you're going to challenge the president in his second term and he decides, you know, let's look into him. And so you look into him, you get a little bit of information.
He hasn't called his mom in 2 months, folks.
Yeah, exactly. And all of a sudden you got a dirty commercial that's hurting the candidate and the candidate goes, what the heck, man? I think that you abused that power and other people, you know, and then there's whistleblowers that are like, oh my goodness, the president used this. So the whistleblowers, they're going to go talk about it. But the NSA is like, Mr. President, you got a couple of whistleblowers in your cabinet because we're tracking everything they said. Like, what the heck? I'm like, well, let's destroy them too. And all of a sudden you've got the ability to see where people are going and what they're going to do as best you can before they do it. And that's the concern the tool is designed to literally try to predict what somebody's going to do so you can prevent them from committing whatever they're trying to do. You know, in the case of violence against the state, it's, you know, we want to figure out who's going to do an act of terrorism before they, you know, do it. But I think in the broader, you know, when you think about it as it's violence against the state, no matter what your creed political stance is, and then if you kind of expand that to looking to political dissent, or because a lot of times, you know, especially domestic terrorism isn't religiously motivated, it's politically motivated, which means the tool is designed to look for political motives just as much as it's looked for religious motives. And all of a sudden, what happens if we don't look for somebody who's necessarily a violent revolutionist? They're just annoying, you know. And it's all of a sudden, I don't know, it just becomes crazy that you sit there and you go, this is such a powerful tool. It's ridiculously powerful. And what gets really disconcerting is that the standard that's being set right now is that they know where you're spending your money, they know who you're making, they know what phone calls you're making, they know what your Google searches are, they know what you're tweeting, and anywhere where there's this new technology that gets integrated into our lives and we all adopt, they go, hey, that's cool information to start to keep track of. Well, all of a sudden, you know, we make that joke about the WeC, you know, Wi-Fi technology that can see where you are in your house. But the reality of it is, it's like, this is a big thing, like the Xbox Kinect. One of the things that that Microsoft did when they bought that one service where you like talk on the phone call,
Skype.
Was really annoying.
It's Skype.
I can't believe I couldn't remember that name. One of the things that they did with Skype was they changed the nature of how the connection between the two clients worked, because Skype in its entire, you know, existence had been a peer-to-peer connection.
Yeah.
There were no central servers that you were routing through. So
which is pretty
there
awesome.
Wasn't, you know, yeah, it was, and because it was very difficult to kind of track from an outside source. The NSA might have been able to do it just because they were tracking everything that was going through the main lines.
It's kind of crazy just all on its own.
But what's nice is that if you kind of knew that, you could route your, you know, you could get a VPN and you could get encryption stuff, and you could route it around sort of a lot of your main hubs. There's things you could do to really minimize that and use it as a communication tool that was more secure. Mm-hmm. First thing Microsoft did was route everything through one of their servers so that the NSA could figure out who they were talking to in case they ever got, because it's a phone service. It needs to be treated as though it were a wiretap.
Huh.
That it's a giant corporation that owns a phone service now, and if anybody comes to them with a warrant, they need to be able to go, okay, here's the information you want.
Wow.
And you know, which, okay, that makes sense, but all of a sudden you're like, well, you're now like openly in league with, you know, okay, you know, like, you're doing what's legal. I don't think what Microsoft did was morally reprehensible, but what we do know is that when there is a tool, they have absolutely no problem turning over that information if they get the right legal precedence for it. So the question becomes, the Kinect has to be always on, always listening, and always watching, you know, in your living room. And the idea there is that, you know, they'll know if you watch commercials. They'll know if, you know... Yeah, well, I know. But,
I love this title, by the way. It says, New what? Xbox by NSA partner Microsoft. We'll watch
yeah,
you 24/7.
Right? Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
There are some good titles out there.
And I would just say, it's one of those things where it's like, you know, this was like, and what's really interesting was like, the drumbeat against the X-Bone. Which is what
is that? Okay, you know what? I thought that was a misspelling, so I fixed it. So,
yeah, I know it's the Xbox One, so that everybody's calling it the
X-Bone
is one word, the X-Bone. Which I like a lot more than the Xbox One.
Yeah, I thought I was like, oh, dude, Matthew, you totally messed up your spelling. No,
yeah, that's funny. Yeah, no,
cool.
I did it on purpose. So the X-Bone. Thank you. The X-Bone is a lot of people were like whining and complaining because there's so many things that they're doing that just are really, really upsetting the gaming community.
Yeah.
I don't think it'll hurt sales that bad when all of a sudden.
No, they'll be fine. They'll be stronger than ever as a result.
Yeah, and but it's like a lot of how they, you know, it's stuff that we talked about on the show where you can't resell games. You can only resell games through, you know, official resellers. They do it so like you can't resell a game more than once. All sorts of things like that. That people are really upset about, but the fact that the Kinect can never be, it has to be connected in order to work, and it has to be always
connected.
Is was concerning on Monday before the NSA whistleblowers started talking about the fact that the NSA, you know, reads everything that you do. You know? So it's like all of a sudden you sit there and you go, if we have cameras always on in our house, we know beyond all shadow of a doubt that the CIA has some of the coolest tools for viruses, or you know, that'll go into computers and turn on your webcam and turn on your mic and they'll listen and watch if they.
I've seen the movies. It's true.
You make a joke out of it, but like they use that technology all over the world. Like
right.
this is not a ridiculous thing for them to do. Not only is it not ridiculous, but it's like standard practice. Like they do that, and all of a sudden you're giving them this always connected tool that has to be always connected to the internet, and you just shrug your shoulders and you go, so how long before the NSA just decides that I think it'd be interesting to keep track of where you are in your house and what conversations you're having with your friends in that little nice microphone that you set there. Which actually the bigger question there is, like, you know, how long until they start doing that with just everybody's computers? Like, how long until it becomes, you know, I
don't care about computers. Computers are trucks.
That's true.
Moving on.
You know, but your phone, your phone, I mean, that's actually, man, some of the stuff that the CIA does with, like, phones and being on, like, Bluetooth-connected devices, where they're like, yeah, we get the virus onto all of these computers. Like, we just, it's a worm. It's self-propagating. It'll get on all these computers. It'll take over your Bluetooth. It'll connect to your phone, and then it'll upload the virus to your phone. Like, what the heck? How is that even possible?
You know, I being a data guy, that sounds like it would be really fun to work for the NSA. As horrible as it sounds, I'm like, man, I wonder if they got any job openings. That is cool.
We probably wouldn't be able to do this show anymore.
Because at HP, they struggle with privacy issues, and you can only keep data for like 3 years, and you got to get rid of it, even though it's like super valuable. And it just kills me. I'm like, we actually have the ability to pair together usage data with customer sales and information. Like, we could, if we wanted to, pair together like how you use your computer and printer with your credit card name information, right? And we could put a profile together of the customers and what they buy. But we don't, for privacy reasons. And
I will point out the fact that for those of you that are listening and not watching, James didn't even use his finger quotes there. He didn't say we don't do that. He actually just emphatically said we don't do that.
Yeah, we don't.
Which would suggest
which
they don't.
It's there. And we could. Yeah. I mean, it would take a little bit of work, because whatever. We could do it, and we don't. Whereas it sounds like the NSA is like, hey, we could do it.
What are we waiting for?
Not
only can we do it, but we really should.
Well, and that was the whole thing around like Google's, what was it, Google One, or they created a dashboard where they were talking about how they were going to start pooling all your information together so you could see what Google knew about you. And everyone was like, Google Plus, they're going to start cross-pollinating, which on some level you're like, awesome, cool, please do that to make it better.
Yeah.
But it's like, man, when it's the NSA, you're like, well, not quite as...
It's a little bit different. You know, you know what the biggest difference is? This is the big difference, and I have absolutely no hesitation in saying this. Is that no. Google doesn't have an army behind it. The NSA has an army of armed bureaucrats that can go around and deprive you of your life, liberty, and freedom legally. Like, that's different. when Google can ruin my life but can't actually shoot me, that's one thing.
Well,
the NSA can ruin my life and shoot me, well, okay, now we're like, let's talk seriously about what we need to do here.
Well, and at least with Google, there's the perception of choice. If I don't like it, I stop using it. Their data collection is done, and I move on. And that's not an option with at least as far as I know. I mean,
well, yeah,
I guess you could move. You could move. I suppose that's not...
Unless you were to go to... Right. Well, and what the worst part of see, that's the thing, James. You couldn't move because it's legal for them to eavesdrop on you in other countries.
Oh, that's right.
Now you're not a citizen. You're more of a target because
I know,
that's where
really. They're like, he didn't like us tracking him, and he moved. Yeah. Now we're really going to track
interesting.
Him.
But he's doing something nefarious. You know, really, the only option you can do is to go like fully off grid. Don't use a credit card. Don't use a cell phone.
I love it.
Don't use the internet.
I want to do
you
it.
Know, and I was going to say, no which internet? Is like, what the heck? That's the big one you got to avoid. So I don't know. It brings up all these really, it calls into question our strategy. Like, we've always been advocates of I put everything online because whatever. Like, I'm not or actually, this totally validates what I've been saying for a long time, which is I don't mess with my Facebook security policies. I don't make anything private because to make things private gives me the illusion that it's private, and it's just not. And that's what really, to me, like, that is why I don't set any of my privacies and block anybody from. I make everything public because I just sit there and I go, I don't want the illusion that that picture can't be seen because my boss can't see it, or the illusion that that email is not being read because I didn't send it to this person. If I put it on the internet, I just assume that people I don't want to read it are reading it or don't want to see it or seeing it, which kind of in retrospect makes me like terrified because I know that there are things out there that I'm like, you know, I'd much rather that never, ever, 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 ever come out, ever. And I don't think it ever will, realistically, which is nice to know. I mean, I'm such a small fish in such a big pond. But the idea that if I ever became a big fish, and I'm the kind of person that doesn't put stuff on, you know, I go out of my way to not put regrettable things on the internet, and, you know, but it happens. Or the worst, and actually, it's funny, it's not what I've put on the internet, it's what other people have put on the other internet and tagged me in, you know, and
right
now everybody knows. You know, and it's not the emails that I've sent, it's the emails that other people have sent to me. And, you know, and that classic, well, if you didn't want to get vaporized like a terrorist, you shouldn't have hung out with terrorists. Thanks. Thanks, guys. Thanks, friends. I appreciate that. Thanks for blowing me up. I don't know, there's just a lot of different, and I guess the bigger thing here is I think that there's going to be a lot of noise to change stuff, but I don't think it's possible. I think we just need to accept the fact that we carry GPS devices around with us. We carry, you know, we send all of our communications everywhere. There's just absolutely no impetus to actually protect us. We require a societal change, but the people in charge, you know, it's like the Supreme Court has ruled that email is not, you have no expectation of privacy with your email. Which is crazy. I mean, like, we have a society that just, like, we would go berserk. You have to jump through so many hoops to open up a person's letter in mail and read their mail. It's almost ludicrous how difficult it is for the government to read bad people's mail. And because there's an expectation of privacy if it's put into, you know, onto a piece of paper. But if you put it into an email, there's no expectation of privacy, which is just nuts. I mean, it's ludicrous. But
what's the same idea of? I mean, in the same vein of, you don't, if you buy an Amazon Kindle book, you don't own it. You have leased the rights to it,
right?
And
exactly.
So they can recall it if they wanted. You can't share it. You can't loan it out because you didn't actually buy the book. You bought the rights to a digital copy.
Right, you know,
and they just treat it, which our laws are inherently not designed for a digital world, and so, and quite honestly, it's one of those things where I think this is probably more true, if letters, the idea of sending mail, had been invented around the same time as email, you would be able to open them up, no big deal.
And that's what I was going to say.
It's just been grandfathered in.
My opinion on it actually is the fact that it is not that the Supreme Court doesn't understand. A lot of people like to yell about the fact that the 9 octogenarians don't get email, but I don't think that's the case. I think they get email, and that's the problem. I think they understand that it is the modern equivalent of standard mail, and what they decided was, this is the perfect opportunity to change the rules.
Right.
It would be really nice if we could read everybody's mail. And we're not going to be able to change that without it being crazy, but we can change it with email. And since email completely destroyed traditional mail, perfect! We got our in! I think that, you know, it's
what a coincidence! Awesome!
Exactly.
We'll keep that old rule around.
Yeah. And that's what gets me. That's why I sit there and I go, that's, I think, why it doesn't bother me, is because it's just, I realize that this is the way that the world works. You know, this is the way that societies are structured. If it ever gets so bad that you can't survive, the society will unravel, and the, you know, tree of liberty will be watered with the blood of patriots and tyrants, and, you know, it happens occasionally. I don't know what to do about it. I just hope it doesn't happen in my lifetime. That's kind of my whole thing, you know. I just, honestly, I'm just trying to, like, you know, have a good job, find a cool girl to have kids with, and just be happy. You know, I can't stress out about this too much, because it's so far beyond me, and it's just so unstoppable. It's just a force of nature, and I'm not going to stop using my phone, my iPhone, to surf Reddit. That's just it. I mean, and if I won't stop doing that, I'm honestly done.
If Reddit becomes a hotbed of terrorists, you'll probably not be interested in it anymore. So
yeah.
Right. I'm just going to start from the assumption that you're not a terrorist and not interested in terrorist types of activities, but. Yeah. All right, man. We have talked about this for a while.
Yeah.
And
you want to move on to something else?
I feel like we could keep going, but
yeah.
I'm really interested in what this Rickroll thing was.
Okay. Fair enough. So
I love Rickrolls. I'll be honest. So,
I gotta say, the Rickroll is the dumbest thing in the world, but it's pretty funny when somebody gets you. And because it's like, it's just such a dumb little, like, oh man. But when you, like, are completely caught off guard by it, or it's like a really clever one, it's good. Well, this kid, I think it's pretty funny. So the day that they launched the Android version of Vine, which, if you don't follow me on Vine, why don't you follow me on Vine? I'm making Vine videos now. I'm all cool and stuff. Actually, dude, I do use... Okay. So I'm going to... Brief aside. My thoughts on Vine so far. There are some hysterical people on Vine. That's
really?
Actually what I use it mostly for. I've got a couple friends that I follow, but most of my friends don't make any videos.
Yeah,
but there are people that will, like, make funny videos like 2-3 times a day and post these little 6-second, like, just short. I tweeted one out, I shared one. The dude who does the manly food stuff, he has how to do different tasks, like how to relax or how to make a pizza. One of his is how a man shaves. How a man shaves. You don't shave. That's how a man shaves. But they're funny, and I follow a couple different people. But that being said, I make videos. But this is my thought. Vine. Yeah, that was from the wedding yesterday. I vined a bunch of stuff.
I see that.
But the thing was, and what gets me is that what I don't like about Vine is that I can't upload from my role. I can't, like, upload the
really?
Videos.
Really? Yeah, can. That's right. You can't. That's annoying.
And why that's significant to me is because I never take pictures with Instagram. I always take it with the camera.
Oh, me too.
Full resolution HDR, and then upload it to Instagram. So I have the backup, the actual high quality unedited photo, not the little cropped.
I thought, man, you almost. You were that close.
That was fun. Not the little cropped, low quality one that gets posted to Instagram, but the, you know, I want the high quality stuff. So I say all that to say, until Twitter gets through their brains that I need to be able to upload other videos and high quality stuff. But what they're trying to do is they're trying to kind of keep it in that genuinely, like, spur of the moment, you take a short video and you make it. They don't want it to be this big marketing thing. But the thing that they got to understand is that the best content on Vine is made by professionals who are professional entertainers. That's actually what I use it for. That's what I want. Keep it 6 seconds. That's fine. But understand that if you made it where you could do your own editing and make interesting videos and upload cartoons and, like, produced stuff, or more importantly, I could upload videos where I take a big video, I take a 10-minute video and turn it into the best 6 seconds, that would be fantastic. They don't let you do that, though. Well, this one kid decided that was an issue. He didn't like it. So what he did was, when he got the Android app, he decompiled the whole thing. He took the source code and he built it back into the...
I wish I was that smart.
I know, seriously. This kid's 16 years old. And after decompiling it, and looking at the source code, he decompiled the binary, turned it back into the source code, took the source code and looked and was able to find all the different APIs, or basically where your app talks to the Twitter servers and allows you to put videos up there, and realized, hey, that's kind of cool. I can publish stuff via, you know, this way. So he built his own app, which was just a very slimmed down version that allowed him to send videos from his camera roll to the Twitter servers, to Vine. Well, the thing is that it turns out that Twitter has a rather glaring security hole in that they don't do any server-side verification of the length of videos. They only do client-side.
Really?
Which means that the app makes sure that the video is 6 seconds long, and the server just assumes that as long as it's getting it from a source,
which is rational,
has all the
you never assume that someone's going to break your app.
Since you theoretically can't get that information from anywhere else, well, this kid was able to do it in less than a day and downloaded the entire Rick Astley video, Never Gonna Give You Up, and then uploaded the entire thing to Vine. Thought it was pretty funny that he was able to get the entire 3-minute video on Vine. And so he tweeted it out to his friends, and he had friends on Vine, and he was like, I've got like 40 friends. I didn't think it was that big of a deal, but my friends were impressed, so they retweeted it.
Oh, boy.
And then their friends retweeted it. And Twitter, I guess one of the engineers sent him a very polite message of, hey, you mind not doing that? You're going to crash Vine. And he was like, oh, sorry, I don't actually know how to undo this at this point. And he crashed Vine. He had to go in and manually. It just exploded really quickly, and they had to go through and take it off manually and fix stuff. But yeah, he rickrolled Twitter and broke it. Pretty awesome.
That's sweet.
Yeah, 16 years old. They were like, usually, like, this is the sort of thing that will get you a job.
Oh, yeah.
But, like, he's still got, like, summer school, so. That's rough, man. That's rough. He's got a bright and shiny future ahead of him.
Yeah, he'll be just fine.
Yeah.
Not concerned about him.
Yeah. But pretty interesting. Little.
That is funny.
So, want to finish it up with a little more security issues?
Yeah, why not?
So, you want to go first or want me to go first?
I'll go.
Okay.
Let's talk about Google Glass, because we love talking about them and what they're up to and some of their problems they're dealing with. Again, friendly reminder, I talked about how much I love Google earlier, and they can track anything they want of me, that's fine. So, just, you know, before we, like, you're bashing Google. No, I'm not.
Yeah.
I bash fairly inequitably. So, this article was actually forwarded to me from our mom. And then I read it later, or, you know, saw it later on RSS feeds, but she gets credit for surfacing it first.
Nice.
Good job, Mom. It's kind of fun. She tries. You've noticed that.
Yeah.
Every once in a while, she thinks she's got one. She's like, oh, send it to him. Maybe I'll be first.
Yeah. And
she finally was.
Once in a while. Yeah.
She had one I was at. So I was driving home from the airport the other day. And, yeah. And she was like, hey, did you hear that? What was she talking about? She was telling me about what she thinks she was predicting what she thinks Apple will talk about in their keynote on Monday. And, and I was like, thanks for informing me, Mom. But
yeah.
I have followed this one closely for a while. Don't worry. I am sorely bummed that tomorrow I will be traveling during just mostly tomorrow. So I'm going to miss all of the E3 introduction openings and Apple's thing. I'm just like,
next week, we should.
I don't know what we're going to do, because I'm going to HP Discover, which is HP's big conference.
Next week's going to be a huge show. We'll probably be able to do a 3-hour show next week.
Yeah, we'll have to talk about that, because, I mean, I do get home Sunday night, and it just so happens that my flight gets in early enough. Okay. Is that right?
And you're going to make my weekend look like a day. I don't know what I'm trying to say.
I don't know.
Well, my little wedding party that I was part of.
Yeah, well, see, I'm not like you. I don't go crazy. The only thing that I might do is I might try to talk my wife into going seeing Man of Steel after the podcast. Because I'm not going to go watch a movie in Las Vegas while I'm there. I'm actually going to see the city and take it in, because I can watch the movie anywhere.
So
next week we'll have to figure that out. However, we'll figure that out. Because I'll know everything about HP and like very little about everything else. That's not true. You know me.
I'm going to say, I'm going to say, well, the problem is there's just going to be a torrent. We almost should We should talk about this episode.
Okay,
show, but
we will.
Okay, yeah.
So all that to say, I got this from my mom. Thank you, Mom. You get credit for bringing this to me. It's just funny. So, you know, Google Glass has been kind of going through a bunch of things where it's technically not really released to the public yet. There's still a developer preview. And there have been a bunch of establishments that have banned the use of Google Glass in there.
Yeah.
Because primarily of the recording feature, and it's like impossible to tell if something is being recorded. And so they're like, well, if we can't tell, you can't bring it in. That kind of thing. Well, add a little gas to the flame. Google has banned the use of Google Glass from their annual shareholders meeting. Which they're like, to be fair, you're not allowed video cameras or cameras or any other recording device. But, you know, it's just one of those.
There's a certain amount of irony to that. I mean, you know, that's...
Yeah, you're just like, they are really going to struggle with this perception. You know, and again, it gets back to that whole privacy idea of, you know, will you have it with this device? Because you won't be able to tell. I almost want to get one just because of all of that, just to see what that's like, to have people not want to talk to you and, you know, you got to take that off. Or, you know, to get
kicked
out. It'll probably just be an exercise of frustration. I really want one because they're cool. it would be interesting. But yeah, that was it, man. They just like... I know why they did it. It's totally logical why they said it. It just is not going to help their cause.
Right. I honestly, it's one of those things where they're running into a major issue. And it's funny when Tim Cook talked about the problem with glasses and you're like, it sounded like a classic Steve Jobs. That technology is retarded. Why is it retarded? Because we're not doing it. You know.
Well, yeah. Well, and I loved it. The commentaries I heard was it a tee up of a Steve Jobs where he was like, "No, this is dumb, but we're going to do it better," or was it the Ballmer, the iPhone, a $600 phone? No way. You know.
Yeah.
Was it?
What's funny is I actually think it was more Ballmer-esque, but I think it was an actual criticism of the technology. Him saying, "I don't think it's going to work." The only thing is, I think I think long term it will.
Well,
I don't think the
current
Google
prototype, yes, 100% agree.
I
will not change the world, but they're going to iterate on it.
This is my thing. I honestly believe that at this point, there is a social, and maybe I'm just because it's maybe it's entirely because of the fact that I read too much news and I pay attention to this and conflict sells that most people don't care or don't worry about it. But right now the narrative is people are worried about it. And all of this and what's interesting is it's like with the X-Bone, you know, it's. It, you know, there's a legitimate, or not necessarily a legitimate, but there is a concern, there is a narrative that the fact that the Kinect is always on is a problem. And something to be worried about. I don't really worry about it. It wouldn't stop me from getting it. The reason I don't get it is because I don't watch TV and play video games on the console, so it's kind of a stupid product for me. But, you know... But the fact that it's always on doesn't bother me. The fact that Google Glasses can take videos doesn't bother me. But there seems to be this sort of general perception that there's something wrong. And like I said, I think long term, people will get over that. But definitely in the short term, profit margins in the next 5 years, I think Tim Cook might be onto something. And it'll just take a little while for us to get over that. This is the part to me that is just like I just shake my head at. The other thing is that they're banning facial recognition apps in the Google store for Google Glasses.
Which is a shame. I know why, but I'm like, man, there's some cool apps if you could recognize faces.
I'm not going to get one. Well, and the thing is that they sit there and they go, like any Android device, number one, they've already shown developers how to rootkit it. So it's like, it's one of those things where they're not like Apple, where Apple actively tries to prevent you from doing certain tasks with their phone. Google, they just don't. There are certain tasks that they don't sanction, but they don't mind. They don't care if you do it or not. There are a lot of apps they won't sell in the Google Play Store, and this is one of them. We just won't let you download it through Google Play. Go, there are tons of other markets. Download it from some website. We don't care. You know, you can do that. You just don't. We're not going to sanction it. But what's interesting about it, and that's why they talk about it that way. So it's not like you won't be able to get good facial recognition. But the problem is that apps that get published and get a lot of notoriety in the Google Play Store get better coverage, perform better, because they make the developers more money. And I sit there and I go, the fact that Google's not letting them do that hurts the technology. And you sit there and you go, and the reason why they're doing it is because of a fear that they're already responding to of, oh, these things are a major security risk. And I sit there and I go, this is the coolest part of the technology. It's literally the only reason I want one is so that I never have to remember a person's name again. Because it just takes it the way, you know, I walk up to some girl and I'm like, hey, how you doing tonight? I'm good. I'm Matthew. Oh, I'm Michelle. Cool. And now I never am going to have to, like, what's your name? What's your name? Oh, my goodness. What's her name? It's never going to happen to me again.
You got your Goodreads app that tells you what book she's recently read and liked. And
exactly.
So you have something to talk about?
Immediately finds their Facebook page. So we're Facebook friends before we're done with our, you know, introductions. And
you find out if she's in a relationship or not instantly. Yeah. I gotcha.
Oh my gosh. I never even thought about that. But that would be the greatest app for going to a bar. Holy cow, that's amazing. It just would be like, hey, how are you doing? What's your name? Oh, cool. It's you know what? Never mind. I'm going to go. Sorry. I that's awesome. I wonder what that's going to do to the success, because you're going to start alienating consumers like me unless the market just has such a ferocity. I think one of two things is going to happen. Either that's all people want it for, and that's what, you know, even though Google tries to limit that kind of stuff, that's what it becomes known for, is it's an invasion of security, in which case people like me an invasion of privacy, in which case people like me will like it. Or Google will effectively destroy its use of that, and they'll say, no, just use it for maps and, you know, and reading text messages on your, you know, on your face. Either they'll succeed in that and people like me won't want it and won't want to spend money on it, and I'm the worst kind of person to not be a fan of your technology, because I care, I talk about it, and people get my opinion and occasionally even listen to me, and I won't be an advocate. Or I'll be an advocate of it, but, you know, your general plebeian will care and they won't want it, and it's if you listen to this show, you're not that, so don't worry.
So we're good.
Yeah. I don't know.
I'd love it. Okay.
Yeah,
we'll see. That may be something, like you said, that they're banning it for today, but maybe not 5 years from now when it's, you know, they dip their toe into the water or something. You know, I don't know. I don't know.
Yeah.
Interesting. Interesting. All right. A lot of privacy issues this week.
Yeah. I'm not sure what the title is going to be, but I have an idea what it'll be about.
I'm still going with a post-Republican Islamic surveillance mechanism.
Oh, yeah. Okay. That's, you know what? That's good enough.
Just random words that all seem important.
Well, I mean, that's like what the Patriot Act is. Like, the actual title's ridiculous.
Ooh, it's Patriot. How do we get that one in there? So instead of post, Patriot. Yeah. I see the R, man. That one's killing me. The Islamic, though. Not like, we'll figure it out. We'll figure it out. Okay. We'll dial it in. But cool, man. Cool. Thank you, everybody else, for joining us. My name is James Furlow, and I already forgot.
Don't share my secrets.
Oh, yeah. And my, how would I say this? My sensitive to privacy, my privately sensitive brother.
This is a clean podcast, James. I'm just saying.
So that guy who really doesn't want you to know what it was that we talked about earlier, he wants to keep it a secret. His name is Matthew Furlow. And so we will talk next time.
Thank you.